Welcome to Pilot Points, a podcast specifically designed for turbine pilot issues. What an interesting couple of weeks we've survived. A captain rescued from pirates on the high seas, an aircrew incapacitated where a passenger had to land the plane, and the president's plane buzzing ground zero in New York, sending thousands of panicked office workers into the streets. But no one was injured, thank goodness. Today, though, I'm going to continue my discussion of V-speed abuses and look at a high-profile tragedy that was not averted. Now, it's pretty well common knowledge that if you lose your engine on takeoff, the appropriate action is to accelerate to V2 until you get to your transition altitude, where you can clean up the wing and accelerate to V-final or en route speed. The question arises of what to do when you lose an engine after obtaining a higher speed, let's say V2 plus 10. Do you pitch to V2, as the AFM seems to suggest, or maintain the higher speed? The question was imminently important back in 1976 when an American Airlines DC-10 literally lost an engine on takeoff right after liftoff. The wing was structurally intact, as were the other two engines, yet the aircraft crashed 4,600 feet from the end of the runway. I'll return to American 191 Heavy in a moment, but let's examine the principles behind V2 as it relates to performance. Unlike VX or VY or even VYSE, which provide the best possible performance on a light twin aircraft, V2 is a compromise airspeed. What I mean by this can best be understood by referring to an aerodynamic chart that you probably haven't seen since sitting for your ATP. Since you did such a good job visualizing line graphs in our last podcast, I'm going to throw a slightly more complex one at you this time. But since you have already seen these before, I'm sure my description will be familiar, and I won't even have to refer to noses. Refer back to V1 Min podcast if you're scratching your head right now. The chart is called an L over D chart, or a lift versus drag chart, or some refer to it as a power curve. The lift or power over drag chart is really two charts superimposed on one another. The first chart is the induced drag chart. Remember, as you increase speed, the wing needs less and less angle of attack to generate a given amount of lift. Total lift acts perpendicular to the wing, so as the angle of attack decreases, the component of lift that points to the rear of the aircraft gets smaller. That component is called drag. That is, drag that is induced or created as a byproduct of lift. Induced drag is rapidly reduced as speed increases. Try putting your hand out the window of your car. Notice the force on your hand while it's perpendicular to the ground. Now begin to twist your hand parallel with the ground. Notice how quickly the force diminishes. So the induced drag curve, when drawn on a chart where the vertical axis is drag and the horizontal axis is speed, resembles the reentry path of the space shuttle. As the line moves from left to right, it drops sharply down from the upper left corner, then begins to level off at about the midway point, until it's almost parallel with the ground at the lower right corner of the chart. If induced drag was all that existed, you could fly a G5 from New York to LA in about 100 gallons of Jet A. Unfortunately, with increased speed, another form of drag appears called parasitic drag. With your hand parallel with the ground, again, increase the speed of your vehicle. At some point, you'll really be fighting the force against your hand. This type of drag has the opposite relationship with speed than induced drag. So this curve starts in the lower left corner, near where the vertical and horizontal axes meet. It then starts to angle upwards as it moves from left to right, slowly at first with low speeds, but increasing exponentially as speed increases. Since both of these curves represent drag, they can be added or superimposed, and the resulting line is the U-shaped or upside-down bell curve that we have all come to know and love. Now, why is it called a power curve? Well, the ability to climb is a function of excess power. A Cessna 172, eking out 200 feet per minute, and an F-16 climbing straight up are both examples of engine power beyond the needed to sustain level flight. The line on the curve not only represents drag, but also the amount of power needed to keep the aircraft in level flight. The area above the curve represents the amount of excess and available power. As the curve dips to its lowest point, the bottom of the U-shape, total drag is at its minimum. Conversely, the amount of excess power is at a maximum. Since the horizontal scale of the graph is speed, we can directly identify where V2 lies along the curve. Most pilots intuitively believe that V2 occurs somewhere around the bottom of the curve. Of 100 pilots asked to place an X on the curve where V2 resides, only 17% placed the X correctly. In actuality, Wiener and VFTO occur near the bottom of the curve, while V2 resides to the left of the bottom. This is why I stated earlier that V2 is not a maximum performance value. Recognizing that the only time V2 has any real significance is when you are operating with one engine out, manufacturers respond to the dramatic trade-off between airspeed, climb capability, and available power by calculating a V2 speed. The best excess power, or climb speed, is near Wiener, but reaching that higher speed would require the climb profile to be considerably more flat. Under the situation where the aircraft has already obtained Wiener, to return to V2 by raising the nose is graphically represented by moving from the lowest point on the L over D chart. Notice the dramatic increase in the area beneath the curve as you move to the left. As airspeed is reduced, most of the energy trade-off is spent overcoming induced drag, leaving less excess power available for climb. This is why AFMs that address the situation, and many do not, will usually recommend maintaining the higher speed. In reviewing the findings of the American DC-10, it was pretty much agreed that the crew did everything they were trained to do. Namely, having reached an airspeed in excess of V2 plus 10, they pitched the V2, as their command bars also displayed. What they could not have known was that the engine had actually torn away from the wing, taking with it the hydraulic lines on the left side. Hydraulics on a DC-10 keep the leading edge slats extended. Without hydraulic pressure, the slats retracted asymmetrically. The stall speed of the left wing without slats deployed was now 6 knots higher than the commanded V2 speed. The wing obviously stalled, the aircraft rolled 90 degrees to the left, and the crash pursued. It was shown in simulator tests as part of the NTSB investigation that had the crew maintained V2 plus 10, the control of the aircraft would have been achieved. Please do not make the mistake that this lesson only applies to aircraft with this type of configuration. The lesson is one of aerodynamics and applies to all aircraft. Keeping this in mind, if you are above Wiener, you actually can benefit by raising the nose to Wiener speed. As always, check your AFM to see how your aircraft manufacturer wishes to deal with this emergency. I realize that following this discussion could be difficult without the benefit of a graphic in front of you. Therefore, I suggest you get the book, Aircraft Performance, Myths and Methods, where the graphs are drawn out and there are even convenient JEP chart-style holes punched into it so you can carry it anywhere. The book is available through the CAV website at www.caviewcompanies.com. When ordering, select that you heard about it from the podcast and receive 20% off. Well, that's all for now from Pilot Points. See you next week. Thanks for listening to this session of Pilot Points. If you want to be notified of new podcasts published to the site or wish to suggest a new topic, just click the appropriate link at the top of the page. I'm James Duvall. Thanks for listening.